Chapter 15. It looks like he had the house built not that long ago, in the last 20 years, so the plans are on file with the city, Danny offers after a minute with his own computer. The land seems pretty open. I mean, I'm no expert. Thank God. That's Allison's department. But I assume you were hoping for something like the preserve, or near a body of water or something? Yeah, Allison says, with what seems like a pout. Styles shakes his head. Woody Goodman is going to confess to the murders and disappear. We'll take him out of town and dispose of his body somewhere else. I don't want to kill him in his house and create a crime scene, or put a body in his car that a cadaver dog will smell when they find where he ditched it. We'll have him write a confession, and then empty his bank account. Danny, that's your job. Transfer that money to Switzerland or some shit like that. What worries me is cameras. We'll have to do a thorough search for them. His hand rests on top of Derek's head for a moment. Isaac, Boyd, Danny, you stay here. I want someone to stay with Mac in case... just in case. The rest of you are with me. Allison stands. I'll go put a bag together. You want registered or unregistered weapons? Unless you've got some that are registered to Woody Goodman, let's go with the latter, Styles says. The others are moving now, too, to change clothes, to get their shoes, make whatever preparations they feel are necessary. Mac, you just sit tight, okay? I'm not sure what will happen when the puppet master is gone. If you feel strange at all, I want you to focus on Veronica. Veronica, you stay with her. Don't leave her side for a minute. Because if the Canema has to have a master, best if it's you. Me? Veronica blurts out, obviously startled. I'm not... Then she looks over at Mac and thinks about all the assholes in this town that could gain power over her. Okay. Allison comes down a few moments later, still dressed in a cute skirt and top, but now it's all dark earth tones, and she's got dark tights on underneath the skirt. She's carrying a duffel bag, which she opens and starts efficiently doling out thin leather gloves to everyone. Styles is also handed a gun and a holster, which he puts on before shrugging into his leather jacket. She takes a moment to strap one of her own to her thigh, underneath her skirt. After that, she zips up the bag and slings it over her shoulder. Ready when you are, she says. Okay, let's go, Styles says, and the group of them turn and head out the door, Derek trotting along at his heels, vest and leash nowhere in sight. They've been gone almost a full minute before Mac finally speaks. Jesus frickin' Christ, you didn't tell me that they were the goddamn A-team? Woody's car is in the driveway, easily recognizable from the vanity plate, so the pack knows that he's home. Only the one car is there, and there are only a few lights on inside. Styles and Allison wait in the car while Scott, Lydia, and Erica go to scout things out. Derek waits with Styles as well, not wanting to stray too far from his side. If there are cameras, all they'll see is some dark, blurry shapes that could easily be someone's dog that's gotten loose. Nobody's face will be on film. But apparently they've worried for nothing. The house has a high-tech security system, but when the wolves get back, they report that they didn't see any cameras. There's the low noise of a television somewhere in the house. A baseball game, of course, but nothing else. Nobody seems to be home. Scott went up on the roof to listen for noise on the second floor, but there was nothing. Okay, Styles says. Allison, Derek, Scott, you're with me. Erica, Lydia, you stay out here. One in the back, one in the front. Call me if you hear anyone coming or if you think something's amiss. On the off chance that Goodman comes out and tries to leave, stop him. No blood. Everyone nods, and Styles heads up to the front door and rings the bell. The easiest outcome here is if Goodman answers the door. Then they can get him by the arms and simply propel him to his car. He won't be able to fight much against werewolves. If he's armed, things become more complicated. Styles is guessing he won't be. But the master of the Canema is aware that someone is onto them. Goodman is obviously a brutal man who isn't afraid to commit violence to further his ends. But against his pack, he knows that it would take a lot more than one asshole to get away. But there's no answer to the doorbell. Styles rings it twice to be sure. Either Goodman knows who's here and why, or he's not answering for other reasons. Styles tries the door, but it's locked. Over the wall, he decides, and they head for the back of the property. It's too high to climb, an excellent deterrent for thieves, but Scott boosts him over, then Allison, and then they're in the backyard. Derek shifts into his partial form to climb over, but changes back to full wolf as soon as he's inside the yard. It takes a minute to locate a door that isn't locked, but they do. It's a sliding glass door, and they slip into the house. None of them speak now that they're inside. They can hear the low noise of the television. Styles' entire body feels taut with tension, a twist of apprehension in his stomach, but he's not feeling much in the way of emotions. Monsters come in many shapes and sizes, and killing monsters is something he does. The room with the television is empty. There's a half-full bottle of beer beside it, and the remote is on the coffee table. Styles gestures to the bathroom, and Scott checks it out. Empty. Goodman can't have gone far, but it's all too possible that he's decided to hole up somewhere with a gun and take out the intruders. Scott goes first into every room, while Allison covers him with her bow. Derek brings up the rear, close on Styles' heels. It's very unlikely that Goodman has enough supernatural connections or expertise to have a weapon that would actually hurt a werewolf. They move slowly from room to room. Scott leads them down a narrow hallway and then stops abruptly. "Jesus," he says, louder than he intends, and the words echo in the empty house. "What is it?" Styles asks. And then Scott moves aside so he can see. The room is set up like a living room, or parlor, large and open, with several couches and a few tables. There's a loft that overlooks it, making the room seem a little larger than it is. The loft has a railing that separates it from the rest of the room. Hanging from that railing is Woody Goodman. There's a rope fastened around his neck, and then to the railing. "Christ on a crackerjack!" Styles blurts out. He jogs forward and drags over a chair, climbs up and presses his hand against Goodman's neck. It's damp, almost slimy, but there's no pulse to be felt. "Dead as a doornail, in addition to being sweaty and gross," he says, grimacing and wiping his hand off on the back of his neck. "But still warm. Think he knew we were coming?" "I think so." Allison is leaning over the table. There are a few sheets of paper there. She carefully lifts them up. "Written confession. To killing all three. Nothing about the molestation. Just that he's been suffering from bouts of rage and has committed unforgivable sins." "What happened with the canema must have freaked him out," Scott says. "I can keep a secret better than anyone," Styles murmurs. He's staring at Goodman's body as he gets down from the chair. His dismount a little less graceful than usual. It's not pretty, and he's starting to feel kind of weird. Stiff. "Jesus, we'd better get out of here. Then we can call my dad." He takes a step forward, or tries to, but his legs don't want to work properly, and he pitches forward. Scott makes a spectacular dive for him that ends up in them in an uncomfortable sprawl on the floor. But Scott is on the bottom with one arm wrapped around Styles, saving Styles' face from meeting the floor, although Scott's elbow does with a crack. "Ow, ow, ow! Funny bone!" "Sorry, dude, I..." Styles is going to finish that sentence with something like, "I guess seeing a dead child molester freaked me out a little," presuming that his legs had just gone out from under him. But something else is wrong. He's not getting up. He's trying to get up. He's sending very firm instructions to his arms and legs about getting him up. But it's just not happening. Nothing is happening. "Oh, crap." "What, are you hurt?" Scott asks, as Derek slinks over with a low whine. No, I can't move. Styles' mind races. Venom! He's not sweaty. It's Canima venom. I wiped it onto the back of my neck. Goddamn nervous gestures. Allison grabs Derek as he starts to nose at Styles' neck to stop him from getting too close. He growls, but it's a noise to show displeasure and isn't actually directed at her. Just hang on, she tells him, and he does stop moving forward. It didn't last that long when it just got on my hand, she says, yanking things out of her duffel bag. But I dipped my hand in a bucket of bleach right away, so let's try that. Close your eyes. Without warning, she drops a rag over Styles' face and sprays the back and sides of his neck and even up into his hair with the bleach she keeps in a spray bottle along with her cleanup supplies. I think I saw a porno like this once, Styles says into the rag. Allison takes it off his face. Did it also involve your work of art? She asks, carefully mopping up the venom before moving on to his hand. You know it, Styles says. Since he's lying there immobile while Allison cleans him up, he says, Shit, this is weird. Why is there Canima venom here? I suppose it is a very unlikely chance, but someone call home and make sure Mac hasn't left the circle. Sure. Scott fishes his phone out from where he's still laying on the floor with Styles and pulls up his phone book. Boyd is listed first, since it's alphabetical, so he hits send. Hey, it's me, he says. Just checking in. Everything cool over there? Yeah, we've turned off the ponies and found some real television to watch, Boyd says. How are things on your end? Complicated, Scott says. We're all okay, but it may take a bit to figure things out. Boyd doesn't question. Okay, keep us posted. Scott hangs up. They're cool. There can't be two Canimas, Styles says. No way! Scott maneuvers around Styles and sits them both up. Derek is creeping closer to lay beside Styles' legs. No, can't be, he agrees. And he's only been dead a little while, so... So the puppet master is still out there, Allison says. We forced his hand. We knew he had the Canima and suspected we might make the connection back to Goodman, so he came here to kill him personally. He must have taken some of the venom from the Canima and kept it for himself, just in case he needed it. Paralyzed him and just strung him up, Styles says. Faked a confession and suicide. That's brilliant! Why didn't I think of that? There's a pause. I'm going to hell, aren't I? Allison says with a shrug. Maybe only to the antechambers. We can share a bench. So, what now? Just leave him? If we don't clean up the venom, what happened to you could happen to other people. Yeah, wipe him down real quick, Styles says, and grimaces. Sorry, then we'll get out of here. He tries to move his hands, and his fingers twitch a little. You're gonna have to carry me. Sorry. Scott shrugs. What's a piggyback ride between friends? I'm just using some water, Allison says, as she wets down on a different rag and climbs onto the same chair that Styles used. It would look weird if he took a bleach bath before offing himself. Yeah, piggyback ain't gonna work, Scott. I've gotta be able to grip for that, and I can't. Styles huffs out of breath. They probably wouldn't notice the bleach. It's a pretty open and shut case. My dad might do some basic investigation if Goodman's wife is adamant that he would never have killed himself, but there's no indication otherwise, and a hanging is pretty hard to fake. You know, without paralytic venom. The suicide note is typewritten, and I'm sure whoever did it typed it up here, on Goodman's own computer, without any other fingerprints or evidence that anyone else was here. No forced entry. It's pretty cut and dry. But we'd better get going before someone in the family comes home and finds us here. You know what? I'm up here, so water it is, Allison says. There's only so much I'm going to scrub the neck of a dead pervert. Princess Carrie it is, then, Scott says, getting to his feet. Styles is staring at Goodman's body as Allison climbs down from her chair. Jesus, he says. Pervert, yes, but murderer? He thinks he would be shaking from reaction if his nerves were still working. We nearly killed the wrong fucking guy. Derek looks like he might be thinking about feeling guilty, but doesn't. Allison looks away from Goodman's body and swallows. Lesson learned, she says briskly. We gather more evidence next time. It was such a good theory, Stiles says. Now we're back at square one. He brightens a little as Scott scoops him up and says, although, I guess if we're going to kill a guy for the wrong reason, a child molester is a pretty good guy to pick. Allison dusts her footprints off the chair, puts it back where it goes, and grabs her bag. Pretty sure Derek shares your opinion. Stiles reaches out to scratch behind Derek's ears. His arm flops uselessly at his side. God, this sucks. Let's get out of here, he says. Scott nods, and they head for the back door. Not one of my best days, Stiles ruminates, as Scott carries him across the yard. Not my worst, he adds. Hell, not even in my bottom 10. But still, not my best day. As they round the house, Erica is standing by the Jeep, nodding her hands together. You were in there forever! What the hell took so long? And why is Scott carrying you? Someone beat us to the punch, Stiles says, and I dipped my hand in Canama venom. Get in the car. I'll explain on the way. Erica scrambles into the back and helps Scott settle Stiles snugly in between them. Allison throws her bag into the trunk and then gets into the front passenger seat as Lydia gets behind the wheel. They're in her car, as Stiles had deemed the Jeep too distinctive a vehicle to take to a possible crime scene. Derek squirms his way into the back and spreads out across Stiles' lap. Stiles' head lolls onto Erica's shoulder. Someone dial my dad and hold the phone up to my ear, he says with a sigh. Erica takes the phone out of his pocket and does so. Hey, Dad, it's me, Stiles says, and launches right into it. I know this is going to sound suspicious, but it appears that Woody Goodman committed suicide about 15 minutes ago. Why are you stressing that word? No, just answer my question, Stilinski says. He stops himself from asking and saying all the things he wants to, because people can still hear his half of the situation. Woodman wasn't guilty. Someone beat us here. There was Canama venom on his neck. Stiles neglects mentioning how he found this out. We're back to square one. In the meantime, I'm anonymously calling to report the body to the sheriff. There's a sigh from the other end of the phone. Would you like to identify yourself, sir? He asks, because he has to ask, and Stiles has to refuse, just to make sure everyone's asses are covered. Nope, I'm good. See you at the house later, Stiles says, and Erica takes the phone and punches the end button. Well, this has been a mildly humiliating turn of events. Nah, you're doing way better than Derek, Stiles says. We had to peel him out of his wet clothes, dry him off, and then redress him, she adds brightly. And Derek growls and play snaps at her. Yeah, but Derek actually got injured. He didn't just wipe his hand through poison and then not notice. Stiles, I wiped my hand through the same poison and didn't notice, Allison points out. Two differences being that I noticed immediately because it was highly concentrated and my fingers stopped working right away, and I was lucky enough to have a bucket of bleach right there to put my hand in. Stiles thinks about this, then sticks his tongue out at her. Why is it that you have to be right all the time? Because I'm amazing. She gives him a bright smile. Just ask Scott if you don't believe me. No thanks, Stiles says. I still vividly remember the days when I couldn't get him to shut up about how amazing you were. No plans on reliving them. And just so you know, I would be applying a joking elbow to your ribs. You know, if I could. Noted, Scott says. I want you to know that the bro code prevents me from retaliating with the ammunition that fits the situation. His tone suggests that Stiles had better appreciate the sacrifice he's making. Stiles gives a little grimace. Given that Scott listened to him talk about how amazing Lydia was for years, he's got ammunition to spare. Yeah, he says, and focuses on trying to wiggle his toes. He can feel his limbs again, that unpleasant tingly sensation of when they've gone to sleep. By the time they reach the house, he can move again, although not in any sort of coordinated way. Scott helps him to his feet and gets Stiles' arm over his shoulders, so at least he won't have to be carried, and they help him inside. The wolves who stayed behind look up, their gazes fixed on Stiles. Then Isaac gets up, leaving the sofa free for Scott to settle Stiles onto it. "This isn't how a completely successful plan looks," Isaac says. Lydia gives him a scathing look, although it's half directed at Stiles himself. Scott huffs out a laugh, and Derek just heaves a sigh, and then jumps up onto the sofa and lies down, partially in Stiles' lap. "Okay," Isaac corrects. "Some of his successful plans have looked this bad or worse, but this one wasn't supposed to." "Yeah, well, at least our goal has been accomplished," Stiles says, "in that Woody Goodman is dead. The problem is that we didn't do it." Isaac's eyebrows wrinkle together. He sits down on the floor right by Stiles' legs and rests his elbow on the cushion by Stiles' knee. "That's not good, is it?" "Pretty much not good," Stiles says. "To all outward appearances, he confessed to the murders, nothing about the molestation, and then killed himself out of remorse. But there was Canima venom on him. That's why I can't move. Because I got it on me while I was checking his pulse. So, someone beat us to the punch. Which means that Goodman wasn't the one controlling the Canima. Which means we're back to square one." Veronica rubs her hands over her face and looks at the wall of evidence that Sheriff Stilinski had left behind. "So what do we do?" "Right now?" Stiles sighs. "I'm inclined to say nothing. It's late. It's been one hell of a day for all of us. My personal preference would be to put on a movie and tackle it in the morning, when we're fresh. Mac, you might want to let your parents know you're staying here tonight." Mac nods and pulls out her phone, almost numb, and then pauses. "Wait, how could he have the paralytic poison, which would be a great name for a band, by the way, on him when I've been here?" "That's actually not that hard," Allison says with a shrug. "Whoever's been pulling your puppet strings can probably get you to change on command. Or, if nothing else, knows where the Canima will be. It leaves a trail from its claws. I was able to get a jar of it at the school today. No problem. Someone who was giving the orders will have no trouble." "So he milks me like a cow. A paralytic, venomous cow. Good to know." Mac shakes her head a little and starts texting her mother. "So he paralyzed Goodman, put a rope around his neck, and shoved him off his balcony," Stiles says, and shakes his head. "That's cold. I don't think even I could kill someone like that, and I'm the coldest person I know." "No, you're not," Allison informs him comfortably, from where she's set about checking her weapons on the coffee table so she can put them away. "My mom's colder. I love her, but she's stone cold. And some of the Alpha Pack might be too." "Mikhail," Erica adds, "that dude was hardcore." "Are we counting evil people?" Boyd asks. "Because we could throw Sebastian Stone on the list." "Okay, okay, I get it," Stiles says, lifting his hands in surrender. "I am not the coldest person I know." He looks at Mac and Veronica and says, "They don't let me have angst very often." Mac shoulder bumps Veronica. "Maybe you should ask to borrow them." "Hey, I've got Logan," Veronica says. "Mr. Mature is good for cheering me up." Mac smirks at her, and then her phone rings. She looks down at it. "Oh, it's Cassidy." Her smile fades a little, and she says, I can still have a boyfriend, right? I mean, I don't have to tell him I'm some sort of weird lizard monster." "I wouldn't recommend it, no," Stiles says dryly. "Just what I wanted to hear," Mac says, before answering his call. "Hey! No, I'm just hanging out with Danny and Veronica." "Really? Okay. Yeah, okay. That sounds great," No, we're just doing computer stuff. It'll be boring for you. Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye. She hangs up and says to Veronica, "He wants to take me out next Friday night. Somewhere romantic," he says. "Ooh, stepping up the game," Veronica says. "Very nice. And unlike everyone else in his family, you can trust that he actually knows what the word romantic means." They're clearly having a serious girl moment. "Ah, young love," Stiles says philosophically. "That gives us, what, an entire week to figure out how to make sure you don't transform into a lizard while you're on your date?" "We've worked with worse deadlines," Scott says. "Hell, for us, that's pretty freaking generous." Derek yawns. Stiles is slowly slumping over, so he's practically flopped in Lydia's lap. He could try to right himself, but he doesn't really care that much. Okay, enough talk. Someone go find Disc One of Firefly." To Veronica, he says, "It's my comfort food, if food were something to be watched instead of eaten. I always go with ice cream, chick music, and Lord of the Rings," Veronica says. "There's just something about the unwashed king of men." She curls up to lean on the side of Mac's beanbag chair. Allison starts packing up the weapons. "Let me put these away. Should I start hauling blankets and stuff down?" "Yeah, sure. Let's make it a party," Stiles says. "We'll help out," Boyd says, getting to his feet. "I'll make the popcorn," Lydia says. Erica gives her a high five and follows Boyd and Allison up the stairs. A few minutes later, the three of them come down trailing rolls of egg crates and blankets, with pillows gripped by the corners. Allison has changed into her pajamas and stuffed a few extra sets into pillowcases for Mac and Veronica. "So, you guys do this often?" Veronica asks, watching the parade. "As often as we can without our parents freaking out," Boyd says, as he moves the coffee table out of the way so Scott can unroll an egg crate where it used to be. "And that's most of the time." "Speaking of parents," Scott says, glancing up, "don't forget we're due back in Beacon Hills next weekend." "Oh, right," Stiles says. "Well, I guess we can all use the break. I might stay here, though, if we don't have it sorted out by then." "Maybe even if we do," Scott says. "I'm not a big fan of splitting up the pack, but it might be a good idea." "What for?" Stiles asks, tilting his head to look at Scott. "Well, if we do get everything sorted out, if we're lucky, then Mac will be a wolf and not a Canama," Scott says, helping Boyd spread the blankets as Erica and Isaac toss pillows and cushions around. "Oh, I guess that's right," Stiles says. "Someone ought to stick around to help you through the transition." "And a new wolf will want an alpha," Lydia says, coming in with the popcorn, "even if it isn't their alpha." "Is my alpha supposed to be the asshole who bit me?" Mac asks. "Technically yes, but you don't have to stay with the alpha who turned you," Stiles says, waving a hand. "It's not unusual for wolves to change packs. We're kind of unusual in how tightly bound we are, which probably has something to do with our recruitment methods. Oh, but that reminds me." He flexes his hands and finds them in working order. "Gotta call Chris." Erica pulls out his phone from where she had tucked it into her own pocket after his call to his father and tosses it to him. "Think fast!" Stiles grabs it out of the air but can't quite close his hand around it, and it falls to the ground. He groans a little but reaches down to get it. Veronica listens to his half of the conversation in interest. "Hey, Chris, it's me again. No, I've got a present for you! No, it's even the kind of present you like, I swear! Don't be like that. You know I always bring you the best violence. How do you feel about tracking down a rogue alpha? Last known location was Shasta Lake in August. Nope, turning teenage girls without consent. Yeah, no, have a blast. I don't give a shit what Justin thinks. What's he going to do? Cry about it? Okie dokie, keep me posted." He taps the screen and then tosses the phone aside. Giddy as a schoolboy. The day my dad is as giddy as a schoolboy is the day I assume someone slipped something into his food, Allison says. Or the day Henry and Rose do something wonderful, like fall into another tiger pit, or an active volcano, or get murdered by pirates. Murdered by pirates is good, three pack members say, in unison, along with Mac. Styles just gives a snort of laughter. Well, for your dad, he was giddy. He actually thanked me, which has never happened before, I don't think. To Veronica and Mac, he says, Chris Argent and I have a complicated relationship. On the one hand, he thinks I'm a snot-nosed brat. On the other hand, I am a snot-nosed brat. But I'm also the alpha of the territory he lives in, which means he has to pay me some respect regardless. It doesn't help that he's torn between wanting me to be happy and wanting to strangle Styles and Scott because I actually joined a pack, Allison says, and shrugs. Oops. No, I think his problem is really more that I'm dating you, Scott says. And he owns a massive collection of guns. Just when I think my life is interesting, Veronica remarks. I know, right? Max says. You think you've got all this drama with your swapped birth parents and your boyfriend who really has no idea what to do with a girlfriend? And then suddenly, bam, the new kid just comes in with werewolves and one-ups you for eternity.
Swapped at birth is pretty good, Boyd says. Soap opera material right there.
We all have our crosses to bear, Erica says, pulling her shirt off. Veronica chokes a little. Erica, we have company, Styles says. I know that none of you are modest, but for crying out loud, a little warning before you start throwing your clothes off would be nice. Right, Erica says. I'm going to take the rest of my clothes off, she announces, and then strips. Once naked, she smirks at Styles. Better? Before shifting into her wolf form. So much better, Styles says under his breath. Veronica and Mac are just trying to keep their eyes averted. Yeah, sorry about her. I mean, they shift back and forth all the time, so modesty just isn't a thing around here. So, sorry if you see more naked teenagers than you are typically used to seeing tonight. Mac blinks a few times as Boyd pulls his shirt over his head. In some cases, not a hardship, she says. And then her face turns pink, hands coming up to cover it. Oh God, I said that out loud, didn't I?
Nothing we're not used to, Boyd says, and starts shooing the others out of the room so they can change without traumatizing anyone.
Scott stays, because he'll stay in human form, but the rest of them go. Veronica and Matt can't help but stare helplessly as the group of wolves comes back a few minutes later. Seeing the looks on their faces, Styles says, they can take some time to learn them apart. I mean, we can tell, but Erica's the blondish one, and Lydia's the reddish one, so that's easy. Derek, you know, of course, he says, gesturing to the black wolf that he's comfortably slumped against. The other three wolves are all shades of brown. The others are easier to tell apart by their size. Boyd's the biggest, Danny's the longest, and Isaac's the lankiest. And the floofiest. Scott's about the same color when he shifts, but he's more compact than the others. Isaac flicks an ear at Styles, along with a little growl at the floofiest comment, but then curls up against Styles' leg, so his irritation can't be that serious. The girls are just staring. It takes Veronica a moment to recover from suddenly being in a room full of wolves. Why did they all change? Why did you change? She amends. Her eyes skip back and forth uncertainly between the wolves who can't speak, but she knows to be intelligent, and Styles, who she can still carry on a conversation with. Honestly, right now the primary reason is space, Styles says. That's part of why they often sleep as wolves. Wolves are pack animals. They're tactile creatures. They like to be close and in contact with each other. His hands stir absently over Derek's fur as he speaks. And we won't all fit in here and be able to see the television if we try to fit 11 human bodies. It is space-saving, Veronica notes. If one wolf sprawls out, another uses him or her as a pillow,
and a third curls up in the space that's left. Allison and Scott aren't excluded, despite their human forms. Mac watches this somewhat wistfully.
If I become a werewolf, do I get to join in the cuddle fest?
Of course, Stiles says. Hey, I'd let you join in right now. If we could be sure it would be safe.
Sorry.
No, it's cool, Mac says. Sleepovers and paralytic puppet lizards are a bad mix.